kind introduction. Well, it's an intimidating honor and a great pleasure to be here, David. I've met you in 71, and you have stayed for thereon in my scientific and non-scientific life, and I remember lots of common memories with enormous pleasure and admiration for your work, which I've had all the time. My David number is small, it's only two. There is one large end project, large end paper, which I had fun, and there was another project, and through Chaim we know that you have been interested in other things than just particle physics. Most people here are particle physicists, not all, but they should be aware that you have been interested in many other things. So the other project was quantum Hall effect and understanding in closed form, in fact, the density of eigenvalues in the lowest Landau level in the presence of impurity by a method which I still find very nice. Unfortunately, we could never go further, but that was something I really cherish. So I wish my David number was larger, but what I try... No. Yeah. I'll talk a little bit about that, because the subject of my talk is other uses of... I don't know, which one should I use? No, before. So maybe. So when I talk here of matrix model, they are the old matrix model. I never learned the young matrix models. And what I'll try to do in the first part, I try to see whether some of the technology which was used for these matrix models, which was fun, which was impressive, I must say, that has been useful elsewhere. And there's one example which I find fascinating, in which I've not worked, or on a trivial part initially, but you will see the modern development. And I thought, I don't know if you know about them, David, but I think it's worth knowing that sometimes these techniques of what you call the double scaling limit, and I agree with Steve, I always call it the scaling limit. I didn't see why it was more double than ordinary scaling. But is this double scaling limit visible somewhere? I mean, by somewhere, not within string theory, but in other places. So one place where it's visible but not of much interest is the crossover near the edge. In most cases, it's not very interesting. But it's like that. You take a random matrix, it has some density of eigenvalues when the matrix is large, which in the simple Wigner case is a semicircle. Now, the number of eigenvalues outside the semicircle is exponentially small. And there is a crossover region here, which in the simplest case, k equal 1, is just a square root. And in a region near this lambda c is where the double scaling limit takes place. In this double scaling limit, the crossover region is some power, which in the simplest Wigner case is 2/3. So there is a region of size n to the minus 2/3, n is the size of the random matrices, in which there is a crossover between the semicircle and zero. And the scaling edge density, that's something we worked out with Mark Bowick here in Santa Barbara long ago, 81, but it's straightforward for this technology, is related to the resolvent of a Schrödinger operator at coinciding point in which the potential satisfies one of these Panleve equations. So in the simplest case, in this KdV hierarchy, the simplest case is just a linear potential. This is central charge minus 2 in quantum gravity language, and coupled to quantum matter, coupled to gravity. And then, of course, it's given by Airy function, the crossover. And I learned from your very beautiful paper in which we were in competition, as you said, that the resolvent at coinciding points satisfied a linear differential equation which due to Gelfand and Dickey, which I didn't know, which was useful here. So that's one place in which the scaling limit is seen, but there is not much physics. This has been used in some spin glass problem, but not with very great impact and relevance. So I would like to see to show another one, which is not due to me, but which I think I was very amused. It's mainly due to Preofer and Spohn, after work of mathematicians of 2 years ago. It's a polynuclear Gross model, and this is related to the Gross-Witten integral. And in our paper, David, on the Larger limit, it was just a continuation of this Gross-Witten integral, but here is just that. So let me remind you, for those who do not remember the Gross-Witten integral, they had considered in 1980 a world in QCD reduced to one plaquette. So if you have one plaquette, all you have to do is to calculate an integral on unitary n by n matrices. They discovered that there is a phase transition at some critical value of the coupling constant. And this phase transition is, again, one of these edge problems. If the coupling constant is smaller than 2, the eigenvalues of these unitary matrices fill part of this circle. However, by the time that this G reaches 2, the circle closes, very much like in the Li and Yang singular scenario for phase transition. And okay, so that's your 1980 paper. Of course, very soon after the discovery of this double scaling limit, Perival and Chevitz immediately constructed the scaling limit related to the closure of this gap. And again, they found that as a function of n to the 2/3 times gc, which is 2 minus g, there was a nonlinear differential equation, in that case, Penelv 2, maybe I could pull out, Penelv 2, which govern this behavior. So that's 1980. In 1989, two groups of mathematicians, I don't know in which chronological order, the two papers are from 89, showed that this model was connected with random permutation. So let me explain that a little bit. I won't give the derivation, but it's amusing. You take permutation of random lengths, n. You draw n at random from some Poisson distribution. So the probability that the length of the permutation is small n is exponential minus lambda, lambda to the n over n factorial. Once you have drawn n, you take one permutation at random with probability 1 over n factorial. So each permutation of length n has probability 1 over n factorial. Then you ask, what is the length of the longest increasing subsequence of a permutation? For instance, here is permutation 2814,5,7,3,6. The length of that permutation of the longest increasing subsequence is 4. And here is what this mathematician proves. The probability that this length is smaller than some number m is given by the integral on unitary matrices m by m exponential square root of lambda trace of u plus u dagger. It's not difficult to prove. It's expansion in characters and Jung tableaus related to permutation. So that's not difficult, but that's their result. So here is the Gross-Witten. You will see. It comes all the time in these matrices. Volodya could.
What is U
here? U is a unitary matrices M by M. This is you calculate this integral. This is the Haar measure on the UM group. You calculate this integral as a function of lambda, and this gives you the probability that you're looking for.
What is lambda there?
Lambda is the Poisson. It governs, it's the chemical potential for the length of the sequence. Okay, so why do they do that? They do that. Well, here comes the physicist, Preo van Spoon. And they, pardon? M, the matrices of probability that L is smaller than M. M is the side of the matrix. Good. So, Preofer and Spohn, in a paper of last year, Physical 2000, PhysRev Letters, constructed what they call a polynuclear growth model, a very simple model. It's a model in 1 plus 1 dimension. You have nucleation events. Here is a flat interface between two phases, A and B, and it's, a crystalline growth. At some time, some terrace will appear with some probability, and then at the minute it's formed, it grows. So this point moves to the right with velocity plus 1, and this one to the left with velocity minus 1. And of course, when the time goes by, there are terraces on terraces, and sometimes they hit each other and simply annihilate. This becomes flat when they encounter. And then you ask, what is the altitude h of x and t? So the author, h being the altitude as a function of time, and x is the position on the on this line. So the authors, Preofer and Spohn, find immediately that it's useful to use Lightcone variables. So here is x and here is t, but of course here is x minus t and here x plus t. And you ask, what is the probability, what is the height at this point x of t, knowing that time zero you are here? So let's see. Here is one nucleation event. It occurs at x minus t equal this, and here this. When it's formed, this point moves with velocity plus 1, and this one with velocity minus 1. Here is another nucleation event, and when they encounter, so you see that these successive nucleation events will define a permutation. This is the first, let x minus t, the second one, the third one, the fourth one. It occurs here at the second x plus t. This one occurs at the at the fourth x plus t. So this gives a permutation of 1, 2, 3, 4, giving 2, 4, 1, 3. And it's a very easy, if you sit down for 2 minutes, you will see that the height here is the longest increasing subsequence of that permutation. Therefore, the scaling theory, well, therefore, in the large n limit, etc., the scaling theory of that growth model is given by this panel V2. I mean, there is map, you have to follow the paper and read the paper. It's their work, I don't want. But this is presumably, at large distance, large time, universal, in the same universality class as a well-known model for growth, growth model, which is due to KPZ, which are here, contrary to what you think, Kardar, Parisi, and Chang, and not Knizhnik, Polyakov, and Zamolodchikov, 86. I see, okay. Well, then this, a direct connection of this field theory of growth model and of matrix model would be welcome. I mean, this is a very clever construction. And I wonder whether, I must say I haven't done anything, but whether this technology could be used for the more interesting case, which is, of course, growing a two-dimensional. After all, we know how to solve matrix model with one more degree of freedom, which is time. We have worked all on that. And so maybe there will be more coming from that. So that's the first part, to show that the dependence of your love of large N, which I shared, has some fruitful consequences. Maybe I should have said that a little bit before going to my next subject, that we met in '71 when I visited Princeton for 1 year. I don't know where you learn about Largent, but I think it's like me. You had invited Ken Wilson to give a talk, and he answered that he could not describe his newly built theory in one talk, and you were clever and wise enough to tell him that he could come and talk as much as he wanted. Ken had realized that the Largent limit, it was a simple Largent limit at the time, was a soluble field theory, and this is where I learned about Largent. Did you know about it before, Ken? I don't think so. I knew about the spherical model in statistical mechanics, but I didn't know there was a connection due to Stanley, but I didn't know the Largent limit, but that I did not know, and certainly in field theory, it's Ken who realized that. However, that was a very simple Largent limit, and it's clear that it's only after Toff's work on the famous Largent limit of gauge theories that the more interesting problem and that the matrix model came in all possible forms over the years, and they still come back, as we learned this morning from Steve and in this work of Kazakov, Kostov, and Kutuzov. Now, the next subject that I would like to describe briefly, because we are late, is a subject which is physical mathematics, which is maybe not always the best physics or mathematics. It's random matrices and zeta function. It comes from random matrices and zeta function, and I don't know, I will try to briefly describe some work recent on which I found some puzzle. Now, it has been known for more than 20 years that if you take Riemann's zeta function, Riemann's conjecture is that all the zeros, all the non-trivial zero for real S between 0 and 1 are located on the line real S equal a half. And of course, as you know, numerical experiments, Ogishko has calculated long ago hundreds of millions of zeros and checked in enormous accuracy that the law of spacing is given by random matrices, unitary random matrices, for reason I certainly don't know. I don't know if mathematicians understand it, but that's an experimental fact. Now, more recently, a lot of things were measured on this distribution and conjecture from there on. For instance, mathematicians got interested into this average moment on the critical line of the zeta function. And those are conjectures due to number theorists in which this average moment increases like log t, which is just the density of zero to the k square, that's the prime number theorem, the log t, times some coefficient with incredibly complicated ansatz. I don't know how mathematicians could have come with that, but so that was the random matrix, not random matrix, that's number theory. And since there were so close connection between random matrices and zeta function, we tried to see, and we there, with Ikami and myself, to see what random matrices could say about such a problem. And after some Keating and Snay, student of Keating, decided that we should look at random matrices and look at the characteristic polynomial of the random matrix, because this has zeros at the eigenvalue. So that's the natural equivalent of this zeta function. And they proved for the unitary ensemble, circular ensemble, that this number, which is here, it's just here, but the density of state for the unitary ensemble is just a constant. So with Ikami, we came back to the problem over last year, and this year I will shortly mention. So we took emission matrices, random, n by n, any probability distribution, unitary invariant, and indeed we calculated the moments of this function, or more generally the n-point or k-point functions. And what we found is that indeed, as number theorists, we're conjecturing that these moments behave like the density of eigenvalue to the k-square times some coefficient. Note that the only dependence on the probability distribution is through the density of eigenvalue. This is universal. This coefficient is universal. It's very amazing. the function f there, if I split the point, is also universal in the Dyson limit. The Dyson limit is a limit of the local statistics. It's the only interesting limit for those kinds of problems. This is the one of the limits we studied with Tony in the work you mentioned, in which we had so much a hard time, because it's a limit in which you let the eigenvalues be very close, but at the same time the size of the matrix goes to infinity, but these products are finite. And this is not the planar limit of quantum field theory. It's more difficult to handle. And this at the time where we wanted to prove the universality of the simple correlation functions. So for the GUE case, I have two more transparencies to show. It's okay. Okay. So for the unitary case, there's an amusing duality between the size of the matrix and the number of points you take. It's an elementary exercise to prove that this integral over n by n matrices for the k-point function is the integral over k by k matrices of that other quantity. So that's neat. It's in a closed form. And therefore, you would say, since n is large and k is finite, I'm looking at a k-point function, all I can do is saddle point. And indeed, you can do saddle point, or you can use the famous Itzigsohn-Zuber formula due earlier, as we know, to the mathematician Harishchandra, and that you get the large n limit very easily from this duality. Now, this Itzigsohn-Zuber or Harishchandra formula is well known to be WKB exact. It's the integration over the unitary group, the relative unitary transformation between lambda and y. It's not the way to prove it, but it happens that it's WKB exact, and therefore you can do saddle point before integrating over the unitary group or after. It's the same because the saddle point is exact. So this gives everything for this. And then for some curiosity, we wanted to know what happens if instead of taking unitary matrices, we took real symmetric Hermitian matrices, we took real symmetric. So there is a duality there as well, but the integral is integral over the symplectic group, finite k by k matrices, quaternionic, but still. And this has a symplectic invariance. And in particular, if we don't split the point, if lambda is a multiple of identity, we can immediately calculate and find the similar result by reducing it to, you see here, the occurrence of the van der Mond to the power 4, which is characteristic of the symplectic group. This is probably not understandable unless you have been working with matrix model. But the reason I'm sharing all that is that if the points are not split, you have to do for the symplectic case the same Itzigsohn-Zuber or Harishchandra formula, and that's not exact, except that what we found, to our amazement, and maybe there are people here who know more about, certainly know, there are lots of people who know more, but maybe even about this particular subject, if the lambdas are unequal, the direct saddle point fails, you have to integrate over the symplectic group. And what we found, to our amazement, is that it's a case in which WKB plus a finite number of correction is exact. In other words, we know cases in which WKB is exact, and in other cases, you imagine that the whole series is there. Here it stops. And that's amazing. I'll show you one example where it stops, two examples. Nobody can read, and it's not meant to be read. All it says is that if these terms were not present here, we would have the equivalent of the Itzigsohn-Zuber formula. However, these terms are present. They are necessary because we work in a limit in which n times these differences is finite. And there are a finite number of corrections to the saddle point. So it's a case in which the WKB series stops. Now, the conclusion is that if I kept going, I would not do my job. My job is to here to wish happy birthday to David and hope that there are many years of science and friendship still in front of us. No. What happened is miraculous, really. I mean, this connection is extraordinary. There are cases I didn't want to go. I mean, these numbers which are the prefactors which are shown are amazing. I skipped one transparency, which I will show if I can find it. Here are these normalization. That's maybe, since you're in the first year, you can read. These numbers, this product of factorial, are in fact related to the square root of the determinant of the Laplacian. And if you want to continue to non-integer value of k, which we wanted to compare with the conjectures of the mathematicians, we had to do. So these numbers are amazing. And there was at least one case in which we disagreed with some numerical data, and we let it know to the number theorists. They redid their work and found that they had made a mistake. So this is random matrix calculation, not zeta function. So we don't know, of course, no ambition to work on random on number theory, or even less to prove Riemann's hypothesis. But it's amazing. This connection is really incredibly striking and still mysterious.
Thank you.
Thank you.